very, very sad. And you like learn why he only says Hodor. And it's,
oh, okay.
It's like one of those, like, I think I got a little misty eye in there, so.
This is the Space Dojo Show, a weekly podcast about all things JavaScript. You can find out more information at show.spacedojo.com. Enjoy the show. DigitalOcean is the best place to get your Meteor application off the ground quickly and the easiest to scale when you find success. I host Crater.io there, so I understand DigitalOcean. Start with a pre-configured one-click launch, such as Node.js, to get it up and running in 55 seconds, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSD in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. DigitalOcean is the fastest-growing cloud infrastructure provider because it's built for developers and laser-focused on its mission to create simple and elegant solutions for developers and teams. Use the promo code CRATER10 on the billing page when you sign up for $10 to get started.
Welcome to the Space Dojo Show. I'm your host, Josh Owens, along with my co-host, Chris Aloy. Welcome, Chris.
Did you forget my name?
No. Say it. And today we have a special guest with us, Evan Yu, the creator of Vue.js. Welcome, Evan.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that a Vue.js t-shirt you're wearing there?
Yeah, it is.
That's pretty spiffy. Need to get one of those.
Yeah. The campaign is over, but I can always make more.
Yeah, nice. I've been kind of interested in Vue. I haven't had a chance to play with it. I've spent most of my time either doing Blaze with Meteor, or recently playing with React. And I'm kind of curious, like, I know Vue is a front-end kind of framework. Can you tell me a little more about it?
Yeah, so Vue itself is, the core library is just the Vue layer, similar to React in the sense that they're both just a Vue. So compared to like something like Ember or Angular, the bare minimal version of Vue is really lightweight and it's super easy to get into because it doesn't bring about too many concepts. So you can start with the simplest example possible, but then when you need to build more complex stuff, you progressively get into more concepts such as components. And when you need to build single page applications, then you introduce the router. And when you need to manage complex large applications, manage complex state, you introduce a Flux implementation called Vuex. The framework is designed to be very incrementally adoptable. It focuses on the approachability for newcomers, and you should be able to get into it and get productive with it really easily, and only bring in the additional pieces when your app's complexity seems to be growing. That's the high-level vision for the framework. And there are also, obviously, some technical differences with the other frameworks. And we can get into that if you feel that's what we want to do.
Yeah, definitely, we will. Maybe I'm remembering this wrong. Like, I've certainly been developing for a long time, but I seem to remember Vue, like the first time I saw it, it was more of like a validation framework, perhaps? Is that, how did you get started with Vue?
It was a Vue library from the beginning. If you abstract the core into just two ideas, it's data binding plus components, and that's it. So the syntax, the template syntax was kind of inspired by Angular 1. Actually, it started as an experiment to sort of just re-implement Angular 1 myself. But the internal implementation is totally different because I was looking at Angular 1 code and it was using dirty checking. I was like, is there any other way to do this? Maybe we can use getters and setters to get, use a different reactivity model, which turns out to be very similar to what Blaze is doing, actually.
We talked a little bit over Twitter, and you don't want to get too much into like Meteor a lot, like you work in there and stuff. But I am curious, like, was there ever a conversation around like having Vue be kind of a more officially integrated library?
Yeah, I actually proposed to do that. The idea is Meteor as a company wants to bet on something that has, I guess, at that moment has a huge momentum, which is React. It has Facebook behind it. It also has React Native. So it just has a few things that Vue doesn't seem to have at the moment. And it was really hard for me to prove that Vue is eventually going to, you know, maybe be on the same level with React someday. I guess for this company, going with React is kind of like a safer bet. Mm-hmm. So I obviously understand the decision, because if I'm running a business, I would have to be really careful about things like that. But so that's also part of the reason why I feel it's probably better for me to work on Vue alone, because then I'm not constrained to align it with Meteor's vision, because it just doesn't seem to overlap very well.
Yeah. Yeah. But you are working full-time on Vue. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
So it was kind of like, I'm just exploring the possibility. I want to see if it's possible to just, you know, work full-time on an open source project. And so I started a Patreon campaign, and it was going reasonably well. There's like $3,800 a month at the moment, I believe. Almost 4,000 probably. So the community is pretty like enthusiastic about Vue. Like it's rapidly growing. Since May last year, that was when the Laravel community started adopting it. So that was kind of a turning point of growth, and it just kept just going up from there. It was kind of like a decision where I feel like the usage of Vue has grown so much that it's probably enough for me alone to make a living off it. So I just wanted to give it a shot. So, aside from the Patreon campaign, there will also be some, you know, contracts for consulting and people making products with Vue, and they're willing to, you know, pay money. Also, some of them are just willing to sponsor the project in order to ensure it, you know, it's sustainable for the long run, and so that their product is also, you know, based on something that will be maintained in the long run.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's working out reasonably well. So
nice. That's awesome. Yeah. I run a Patreon account myself, so that's pretty impressive to have it at $3,800 a month.
Thanks.
I remember looking at Vue, maybe it was last fall. Was it 1.0 when it kind of, you were real popular and kind of everywhere for a little bit, and it was in the Meteor world a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's where I kind of come from as a developer, is in the Meteor land. Yeah. And I started looking at it again recently when Josh mentioned this was coming up, and I noticed the GitHub, like the awesome page, or that page with all the information. I was really surprised at how much traction you've got. There's a lot of projects, a lot of plugins, there's a lot of components like ready-made Bootstrap and material design. And I was really impressed with how far you've come.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's been quite a long time, actually. I mean, the initial version of Vue was, I think I started working on it at the end of 2013 as an experiment. And the first official release, public release, was in February 2014. So it's like over 2 years now since it first came out. Although it remained a kind of like a side project for quite a while. But it was around the 1.0 time, that was when I felt like it has the potential to become something bigger. So I kind of made a push for it to get a 1.0, get a big release out, get the community more involved and all that. So I think it's just been going really well for the project since then.
Great. That's awesome. You mentioned that one of the principles was the you know, being able to start small and kind of add the components or the building blocks as you need to, as you go on. When you do that, you kind of introduce like a, you know, if I'm starting out and I'm just going through a to-do, you know, hello world type application, then I need to add a router or something like that.
Right.
Am I recreating a lot when I do that? Like as I take those steps of evolution through, you know, from a small example to something larger, do a lot of things have to be reworked, or are you kind of, because you plan for that along the way?
Right. So you definitely need to plan along the way. By talking about incrementally adopting stuff, it's more like, it's about the learning experience. So when you first learn something, I feel like a lot of these big full stack frameworks, they throw all the concepts at you all at once. So they jump directly into an application mindset. So we start with this application instance. It has a router, then you go into this Vue and all that, which Vue takes kind of the opposite approach. So we start with the bare minimal of a component, right? We don't even tell you it's a component. So it's just a view. You have a data object. You have a piece of template. You want to bind these two together. So the only thing you need to do is just create a view instance. So that's the bare minimal. And then we kind of explain the concept of how data binding works, and you will see how the reactivity works, and you kind of get like the core of the library instantly. And then we tell you, hey, this thing is actually a component. Now you can just wrap this up, make it reusable, and you can nest them. So now you have a view hierarchy. Mm-hmm. You can build more complex interfaces. And then we tell you, hey, now you want to manage routing. And in fact, routing is basically just mapping the URL to a tree of components. So we already have a tree of components. We just, you know, teach you how to map them. So the whole thing is more designed around how to make people understand how the framework works and how each piece, what each piece is designed to solve what problem. Instead of telling you, here's are all the pieces, you will likely run into all the problems. Right. You need to figure them out all at once. I feel that's not the best way for people to learn things, right? So after you've sort of understood the whole thing, obviously in the process, you'll probably have to recreate something. But now you have a much better understanding of the whole stack. And now when you start a new project, you have a better intuition of deciding what pieces will I actually need for this. Because I will understand, like, if this is simple, I probably don't need a router, right? If this is going to be complex, I probably need the state management solutions from the beginning. So I think that helps even when you're working on non-view projects, because it's important to understand, you know, what front-end applications, it's something unique to front-end applications because the complexity covers a wide spectrum, right? So having good intuition on the projected complexity of the project and picking the right tools for it is important for every developer, I believe.
Just going through your documentation, which is very well laid out, very clear, very concise, starting smaller and working your way, I noticed that, and the mental model of that works. It's good.
Thanks.
I think a big part of a project taking off, especially like this one, like managing an open source project is kind of tough, and it's more about building community and people that want to contribute more than anything if it's going to be successful. Like, how have you kind of approached and handled that part of this?
I think it kind of came naturally. So I definitely have a lot to thank for the Laravel community, because they are a big driving force. So ever since the adoption, so thanks to Taylor, who's the author of Laravel, he basically started using Vue in some of his projects and he tweeted about it. And then the Laravel community discovered Vue, and it turns out because Vue is like a perfect fit for back-end frameworks like that, because a lot of the applications built with Rails or Laravel are really single-page applications. So big frameworks are oftentimes overkill for the need of those specific apps. And Vue.js fills that gap really well because it doesn't force you to adopt the whole stack, right? You can just take the Vue layer and just fits in really well in those applications. So Laravel community jumped on it. It's a really like very active, and all the people are really enthusiastic about sharing and, you know, pushing the community forward. So there are a lot of contributors. I mean, a lot of the plugins in that awesome Vue page are from Laravel community members. It's also growing pretty well in China, partly due to, you know, my connection. So, you know, I've been on the Chinese internet as well. There's a Chinese version of Twitter called Weibo. I kind of, you know, tweet about it. And there's a Chinese version of Quora as well. I answer a lot of front-end development questions there. And I guess I didn't really try to treat it as a, you know, intentionally managing the community or anything. It's mostly just, I don't think I have any like specific plan, or I designed any, you know, specific way to boost it or to, I just feel it grew really naturally, and I don't want it to change, because I feel like, I guess I took it from a different angle. Instead of trying to directly, you know, make it more like a community thing, I always try to make the library itself designed for the users. So for example, during the 1.0 process, it's kind of like an open process where there were a lot of deprecations, right? So before I actually started working on it, I opened issues about what's going to change in 1.0, and then people chimed in, and there were like really, really long discussions about how the template syntax should change and all that. And people would just make really good points, and some of them changed my mind about how things should work and all that. I think that's the part where it's really important. Let the community chime in about where the project should be going and give them the opportunity to sort of offer what they think is important, because sometimes you don't fully understand what they actually need. Especially for me, like I primarily make single page applications. So sometimes I don't really, although I tend to prioritize the experience for all kinds of developers, but you really need to listen to them to understand what they really want. So I think that's the important part. And other than that, I've just most been tweeting and, retweeting good stuff from the community. Nothing much more. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of wonder how interesting it would be to do YouTube videos where you show here's a Vue.js app. Mm-hmm. And I've built the front end and I've connected it to this back end, be it Laravel or Feathers or Meteor or different places like that. Yep. I would think that would actually do pretty well to draw in people using the setup.
Definitely.
Yeah. Are there other people that have committer rights to, the Vue.js repo, and how do you make that decision to kind of bring people into the fold there?
Yeah, so there are currently around 10 people on the team, I believe. They all have commit rights to it. But I guess the policy is if you want to submit something, always submit as a pull request. I gave them commit rights mostly so that they can manage issues. I opened a call for contributors a while ago. So I received almost 50 applications. And I was just picking people who have already been actively involved in the community. I've seen some of them, helping me diagnose issues or fixing bugs. Some of them have been answering other people's questions on the forum or in the Gitter chat room. Some of them have been making really good tutorial series. People like that who have already been showing the track record and the willingness to contribute to the community. I think these people are the best people to take in. Even if they don't directly contribute to the code, I feel it's valuable to have them, in this tighter-knit small team where I can get more input from them. They can get more, insight into the code base from me, which I think is a great thing. So the team is not really organized as something like someone is assigned to work on something like that. It's more like a loose team concept where you are just free to contribute to what you see fit. The most important thing is just, help the project.
What is it that you're focusing on now and in kind of the near future? What's coming? What's on the roadmap, I guess?
So the roadmap right now is Vue.js 2.0, which I actually wrote the post a while ago. So 2.0 is a complete rewrite, but retains a largely compatible API. The major change is the underlying implementation, where the rendering layer is greatly improved using a very lightweight virtual DOM. It's a fork of SnapDOM, which is a great, really lightweight, tiny implementation of virtual DOM that's efficient and modular. So that's why I picked it, because it's it kind of serves as a really good base to build a more customized system on top of it. So with that in place, we now have a much faster initial render for really, really large pages, and also server-side rendering. We also implemented streaming server-side rendering. Also, because of the virtual DOM, we now have the ability to mix templates and virtual DOM render functions. So you can either use templates for your components, or you can use React-style JSX rendering, or you can just do HyperScript, which is just calling functions to create your virtual DOM. And you can even mix them so that you can embed a render tag inside your templates and drop down to the virtual DOM layer to do manipulations where high flexibility is required. But for other more you know, interface-like places, you can just use templates. So other than that, these are the major things about 2.0. And also performance-wise, it still carries over the same reactivity system that Vue 1.0 has, and addresses a few cases where the other mainstream virtual DOM implementations tend to suffer from, which is over re-rendering large component trees. So similar to Blaze is actually a good example of how reactivity knows precisely which part of the view has changed. Instead of having to trigger a re-render from the top and try to find out if anything has changed, we now know precisely what component in the tree has changed. So we directly re-render from those nodes instead of going from the top and try to re-render and compare everything. What this means is to optimize your app, you no longer need to do should component updates or use immutable data structures, because the system is already built to handle precise updates. So you don't need to worry about your components being over re-rendered.
You mentioned the server-side rendering. How does that work in, this is the front-end client-side framework, right? Am I right on that? How does the back-end, where is that, how does the server-side rendering?
So
the
server-side definitely uses Node.js, obviously. The way you do it is you will create, the core code base is now divided into two parts, the compiler and the runtime. The compiler actually can be detached, so you can pre-compile all your templates into render functions and ship the runtime only. So the runtime also runs on Node.js as well, because it's actually decoupled from the actual parts that touches the DOM. So in the server-side environment, you can just disable the real DOM operations and create a Vue instance without the DOM. So when you create that, it only has a virtual DOM representation of what it should look like. And now you convert that virtual DOM representation into a string, and I guess server-side rendering. So that's kind of how it works in the gist. There are obviously more details when you combine it with a router or combine it with other stuff, but the core idea is you would just almost do the same thing. You import a component, create an instance of it, pass it to the render to string function, and just give you a string back.
Now, you mentioned that it's going to be streaming server-side rendering. Mm-hmm. What's the difference there?
So streaming server-side rendering, instead of giving you back a string, it gives you back a stream object. So in Node.js, streams are used in a lot of places like HTTP requests, HTTP transport, file system interface thing, and all that. The benefits of stream is that it has all these like congestion control and back pressure control and all that. So basically, imagine if you are doing a synchronous render, which took 40 milliseconds or 100 milliseconds, let's say, that would block your whole server event loop for 100 milliseconds. So during that period, it will be completely unresponsive. But with a stream, the system basically knows the stream is in Postmodes by default. And when the HTTP, so you pipe the render stream into an HTTP response object, so it kind of divides up the whole rendering process into little ticks, right? So every time the HTTP response say, I need more data, then we would do some ticks until we have enough data to push, and we push it, and now we yield the event loop to something else that's going on, and we would just stay idle until this HTTP response says, now I need more data again. Now we keep rendering, doing more ticks, and we send more data back. So this way, streams can allow your server to stay more responsive, because between reads, the CPU gets time to do other work that might be going on. It's sort of like the asynchronous I/O of how the node system is designed to work. And also, because of the streaming, the initial response time will be faster, because let's say 100 millisecond instance to render the stream with the streaming mode, you probably get the first byte back at around like 20 milliseconds. And now you get another few bytes in another 20 milliseconds. So you get this gradually sent over the wire, and overall it just results in the client seeing the data earlier, faster. So they see the content faster as well.
I'm kind of curious, like coming from Meteor, looking at Blaze and how it works, like you have, or really the whole stack, right? Like you have DDP and that shipping data across and getting pushed into Minimongo, which is like wrapped up with Tracker so that you can do, like you can detect when new data is coming in. And it'll invalidate and kind of re-render that data for you. Like, let's say I'm using Laravel or Feathers or something like that. Like, is there a way that you easily kind of get that reactivity on the Vue side?
Yeah. So the core idea about Vue's reactivity is every data is just plain JavaScript objects. The way you think about it, after you create your app will be observing the state of your application. And the state of the application is just an object that's being made reactive. To get new data into it, you just set things on the object. So it's really that simple. So let's say you're integrating with a WebSocket data source or like Firebase or something like that. You just subscribe to the database. And for example, you subscribe to a list of items. And on every change, you probably will get you can either get the whole, you know, updated collection of objects, or you can, you know, get information about add or delete or things like that. For example, the Firebase binding essentially does this by listening to a Firebase reference, and which is similar to a Mongo cursor, that gives you information about item added, item deleted, item, you know, the whole collection was replaced, or things like that. So you just do the corresponding data operations. If an item is added, you just push to the array. If an item is deleted, you just remove it from the array. You splice it from the array. So the real like data operations of Vue.js are all just plain JavaScript objects. You manipulate the data, you get Vue updates. That's it. That's kind of like the low level way of doing things. And on a higher level, so the state management pattern called Vue, which is similar to Redux for React, kind of abstracts over this layer. So that your components no longer directly talk to the data source anymore. They all talk to the Vue store. So the store abstracts the
what is that word? What was the
Vue? Vue. So it's just Vue appended with an X.
Okay. Wasn't sure if there was a K or I wasn't. Gotcha.
When you use Vue, your app would have a store, centralized store that contains your application state. Kind of like Minimongo on the client side. It's like a mini database, right? So your components would get data from the store using getters, there, which are just pure functions. You know, you get the state, root state object, and you return some part of the state to the component. And the component would bind that as a property on the instance, which you can then bind to in your templates. The way to mutate the store is by dispatching actions, which is similar to how it works in Flux. You can also think of it similar to Meteor methods, which is you just, you know, call a function, which dispatches an action. That action causes a mutation in your state. And because of how the reactivity system works, when the mutation happens, your view will be updated. You don't need to worry about, you know, what happens after that. The good thing about using a state management pattern like this is first, the whole thing of interfacing with state is normalized into this getter and action interface. So it doesn't matter what data source you're working with. They're all talking to Vue, right? You can even swap between a WebSocket data source or a Firebase or anything else. Mm-hmm. As long as you make sure your components are talking to the store, and then the store will be talking to the actual data source. So there will need to be a sort of like adapter layer for the store to talk to those services, but that's relatively simple too, because the store itself is also, you know, just holding a plain object. So you do the same thing, right? You listen to a WebSocket source, and on a new update, you just, you know, manipulate the array or push stuff into the array, and that's it. It's really easy to write the adapters yourself. In a typical example, if it's a REST API, it's even simpler. You just, you know, make an AJAX request, get the response back, and shove it into your store, and that's it.
What is the advantage, or why build Vue? Is that how you were saying it?
Mm-hmm.
Why build that? Why not use something like MobX or Redux directly?
MobX is kind of overlaps with what Vue does, because So it has exactly the same reactivity mindsets with Vue in that you should just be able to manipulate your objects and things update. There's an overlap, and Vue Core already implements what MobX does. It's kind of baked into it. So let's imagine if you use Vue without Vuex and you just, you know, manipulate state directly inside of components, that's basically what MobX is like with React. The problem with that is your state will be naturally scattered around the place. Like, you still need a centralized pattern to manage cross-component state. A common scenario I've seen from beginners when they use Vue is they tend to put a lot of state directly inside the components, right? As a result, the state of the application is scattered between components. When a piece of state is actually shared by multiple components, if you don't abstract it out into a standalone store layer, you would then find yourself trying to synchronize between components. And that becomes a really hairy problem. That's not the place you want to go. So that's why you need to parse the state out into a store layer. And the reason why Vue doesn't play well with Redux is because Redux is, you know, after all, it's designed for React. It kind of favors this whole, you know, get the whole state object back and update from the root concept. With Vuex, it's more different because with Vue's reactivity system, you want to be able to precisely track what has changed, right? Instead of returning a whole new state tree on every update, we simply mutate it. In Vuex, when a mutation happens, you really just, you know, change your object. You just set the property to something else, or you manipulate the array. And the reason we are able to do that is because, you know, Vue converts stuff to be reactive and knows what has changed, and it's able to then more precisely update your DOM as well. So with a Vue plus Vuex application, everything is pre-optimized without having to do things. So Redux with React, it obviously has some optimizations in the integration as well, but still, in a lot of cases, you still need ship component updates in order to, you know, fine-grain manage how your component tree updates. But in Vuex, it's strictly a no problem. It's a non-existent problem because the DOM updates is directly tied to how your data changes. And aside from that, I do want to obviously recognize that Redux has the advantage of, because you return a new state tree on every mutation, it's easier to do, you know, undo redo because you basically have snapshots naturally. So in Vuex, because things are actually mutated, you would have to manually do snapshots yourself if you need that. But in most cases, you don't. So it's kind of optimized for different use cases. In most cases, you want your updates to be as efficient as possible. And that's what Vuex prioritizes on. But if you want to do snapshots, you can too. And as long as your application is not overly complex, the performance is also acceptable. You basically JSON serialize your states into a string on updates. So it's also totally possible to do, say, time travel debugging with Vuex, which is a built-in feature in the Vue DevTools Chrome extension. So if you use Vue and Vuex and you install the Chrome extension, every mutation of your state, you will see a record, and you can just time travel between them, and you will see your app just update, jump between those states as you step them. And then you can, say, revert to the state or commit here and then start tracking new changes and all that.
Is there a back end or a way, if I was just getting started, mm-hmm. I like Vue, I've played with Vue, is there a preferred or a way that, you know, kind of works out of the box? You mentioned Laravel. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of where a new developer would go?
Not really. So from Vue's perspective, there is no preferred backend. I tend to believe the project should be built in a backend agnostic way as much as possible. We don't prescribe you to using anything. So my personal preference is Node.js, obviously, so that you also get easier server-side rendering when 2.0 comes out. The idea is that in most cases, the integration should be trivial. So there is a project called Vue CLI, which helps you scaffold projects. Mm-hmm. But that's for complex single-page applications. Because when you build something like that, there are a lot of moving pieces. The recommended setup is using Webpack. When you use Webpack, you run into a bunch of issues. You need to configure a lot of loaders. You need to do hot module replacement during development, which Vue supports. You need to build for production. You may want to, you know, split routes asynchronously and minimize your stuff and extracting your components, CSS, into a single file and all that. So it can be a lot of workflow things to go through. So Vue CLI basically abstracts that away from you. You just npm install GE Vue CLI, then Vue init Webpack project name, and it scaffolds the project for you. And then you just go into the project, npm install, npm run dev, and you get the app running with Webpack pre-configured working out of the box. And then with hot module replacement working out of the box, if you edit the file, you will see the app just update instantly without reloading the page.
So I think the other thing that's kind of interesting to me is watching, like, Angular 2 has now come out and kind of disconnected the DOM from, you know, what the renderer, so to speak, and React's done the same thing to get React Native to work. Mm-hmm. Has there been any thought about, like, changing up how Vue works so you can get something like Vue Native, or do you think that's maybe not as interesting to the community?
That's actually exactly what we've done in 2.0. So virtual DOM is basically what allows us to decouple the core implementation from the DOM. So when we say virtual DOM, maybe we should stop calling it virtual DOM because it's more like a virtual, it's like a data structure that describes what your interface should look like, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be rendering to the DOM. It can be made to update the DOM. It can be made to render to a string, and it can be made to render to a native backend. So theoretically, you can use Vue 2.0 and render it to React Native or Native Script or things like that. So technically, it's all possible. So currently, there is also a project called Weeks, which is a project from Alibaba, which is the biggest e-commerce company in China. Sort of like eBay, PayPal, plus Amazon combined for China. So there is the mobile department of their company uses Vue in some of their internal projects, and now they are investigating. They've previously had worked on a native rendering framework similar to React Native, actually really early on, but it didn't catch on because they didn't find a really pleasant API for people to use it. And now they are basically combining Vue's API with their native rendering backend to create something that allows you to write a Vue component that renders to native apps, which is called, that project is called Weeks, W-E-E-X. It's, I believe it's in invitation only mode right now, but they're planning to open source it later this year. And I'm actually working with the project lead of that project to coordinate that between that project between Vue 2.0, because they are actually directly using Vue 2.0 core as the JavaScript runtime. So essentially, we replace Vue 2.0's patching operations to, instead of manipulating the browser DOM, we are now making API calls to the native rendering backend. So it's not precisely Vue native, but it's pretty close.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Evan. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting.
Ben started this thing when we first started the show. Like, I think he stole it from JavaScript Jabber, just saying, like, you know, go around and pick something that's kind of like been pretty awesome for you lately. It doesn't have to be related to tech, but let's do that real quick and do our picks. So
I'll go first. Yeah. I picked up a new camera this week, a Canon 80D. So far, only a couple days so far, but it's awesome. Definitely recommend it. I'm kind of a photographer here and there and have been enjoying it for the last few days. So that's what I've been playing with lately.
Nice.
So I recently picked up a PS4 and got a game called Dark Souls 3. It's a very, very hard game. I've been dying so many times, but it's also really, really fun. So if you see Vue 2.0 release delayed, it's probably because of that game.
Nice, nice. So I'm gonna go maybe a little lamer. I don't know if this is making my life any better, but I'll go with Game of Thrones. So,
cool.
Like, it's still just on my brain from yesterday. Like, I don't know if you guys watch it or not, but like,
I haven't. Could you don't talk about it?
Yeah. Well, the only thing I'll say is, like, you know, it's in season six. You meet a character that's been in the show off and on since season one, and like, his name is Hodor, and like, you don't, like, all he says is Hodor, and you don't understand why. And like, the episode last night was very, very sad, and you like learn why he only says Hodor, and it's,
oh, okay,
it's like one of those, like, I think I got a little misty eye in there. So kudos to George R. R. Martin, because six seasons in, like, you know, I think someone tweeted, like, I didn't think I could care about another character death.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are in season six, and like, mm-hmm. it happened again. So it's kind of funny. It's impressive. So that's it.
Cool.
All right. And if people do want to like try out Vue, where do they go for that?
Go to vuejs.org. That's the official repo. And also check out Awesome Vue, which has the wider ecosystem of all the things available.
Nice. Yeah. And there's a nice, if you go to vuejs.org, there's a nice Patreon button there that people can click on and contribute. So, and as always, a big thanks to DigitalOcean. They sponsor this podcast. They make it possible. So if you're looking for hosting, be sure to check them out, digitalocean.com. And I run a Patreon as well. So if you enjoy the podcast, feel free to go to patreon.com/MeteorClub, and you can join there and you get into the Space Dojo Slack channel, which is pretty awesome. So thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Great conversation.
Bye.
This has been a Space Dojo production. You can find out more information about Space Dojo at spacedojo.com. It's easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. That's SPACEDOJO.com.